Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Terry. It's been a long process, but we've hit a denouement here, and it's time to get the job done today and move ahead. Since the last council meeting, the Habitat PDTs and Close Area Technical Teams have met jointly on April 29th, May 10th, May 29th, and May 30th. The joint committees met May 17th and the 11th of June. And from all of this and all of these meetings, we have finally come up with a suite of proposed options to present to the council. It's the job of the council today to take these proposed options and hammer them into a suite of alternatives that will then go on for analysis and become part of the omnibus EFH Amendment Number 2, OA2. The alternatives will then be analyzed and improved by an industry workshop and further joint meetings of the two committees to include a report to the council in September, where they will be able to do more tweaking, and then we'll be choosing our preferred alternatives in November. They'll go out for public hearing and be available for final action in April. I mention this because I want to make it plain to people that nothing's being written in stone today. What we're doing is we are developing these alternatives as templates to move forward so that we can come up with the final approved alternatives for the amendment. What I'm going to do today is, first of all, the materials behind tab 7 as usual, and we'll be working primarily from offering number 4, Omnibus Essential Fish Habitat Amendment 2 Draft Management Alternatives. And what I'm going to do is to turn this over to Michelle to explain the alternatives, and then we have 15 committee motions to go through, and we should be able to do all of those by acclamation.
I like your positive thinking.
All set? Okay. Can everybody hear me? Okay. Thanks. So what we're going to do here today, this presentation follows really closely with Document 4, as Dave mentioned. I'm going to be putting up slides that really explain what the alternatives are and have some text, and Andy's going to be putting up slides that show some maps and some pie charts of the sizes of the different areas as compared to what would be open in a given region. So you can kind of watch both screens as we move along. I don't know why this isn't advancing. Sorry, I thought this would work, but apparently it's not going to. So as the chair mentioned, the purpose of today's meeting is to select a range of alternatives to be analyzed in the DEIS for Omnibus Amendment 2. There's, broadly speaking, two different types of alternatives that we're going to be discussing today. Those that relate to protection of groundfish spawning and those that relate to protection of habitat. And the habitat protection alternatives really have three different sort of components that all fit together. There's some options that are really designed primarily around minimizing the adverse effects of fishing on EFH. There's options that would do that, but also particularly focus on protection of juvenile groundfish habitats, some species in particular. And then there are options within these alternatives that designate areas for habitat research. As some of you who have been on the council a while are aware, the council did approve a range of EFH designation and HAPC designation alternatives for this amendment. They're already included in the amendment. There's nothing that needs to be done at this meeting with those alternatives. And when you see the full DEIS at the November meeting, All of those alternatives will be included within it as well. So Dave really already covered this, but we had a couple, a series of joint meetings, joint technical meetings and also joint management meetings during April, May, and June of the Habitat Plan Development Team and Closed Area Technical Team and also the Habitat and Groundfish Committees. I just wanted to point out a couple of things that the joint technical teams did at recent meetings. We looked at some of the, during our earlier meetings in May, we looked at the various individual area management options and evaluated them in terms of a number of different metrics, including their attributes, whether they were encompassing juvenile groundfish, spawning groundfish, habitat vulnerability characteristics, species diversity, a number of things. And so that sort of formed the foundation for future discussions by the technical team. At our most recent meeting at the very end of May, there were two main things that the technical group did at that meeting. And really, the first thing we looked at was whether the various sub-regional options and different combinations we felt would meet some key objectives of the amendment. And then once we had established that, we drafted a series of sub-regional alternatives that would meet those objectives. And so in terms of your meeting materials in the larger packet, there's one of the items, item 14, I believe, is a memo that was drafted by the technical teams to the Habitat Committee and Groundfish Committee, and it includes all the alternatives as they were originally developed by the technical teams. You'll see that many of those are the same as what came out of the committee, and then some of the committee alternatives are different. And in addition to the alternatives and maps, there's a discussion in this document of some sort of key issues that the technical teams identified and discussed in our deliberations about how the alternatives work and whether or not they meet objectives and that kind of thing. So again, as Dave sort of covered, the next steps are to develop the draft EIS, and that's going to happen throughout the summer and the early fall. That's going to involve, as Tom mentioned earlier, some kind of a interaction with various stakeholders to get additional information about different areas, suggestions for how things may be modified, suggestions, you know, for whether or not the analysis is making sense and being understandable to people. Obviously, the EIS is going to include an analysis of all the potential effects of these measures and specifically a practicability analysis related to all the measures. As we move forward in development of the EIS, we can fine-tune these alternatives, and obviously that can also happen after the council gets comments from the public. What's planned currently is that the council will review the draft EIS and select preferred alternatives if possible. That would be in November. After that, sometime, you know, after the holidays perhaps, depending on the timing, we would have public hearings and a public comment period. And then, you know, once those have concluded, the council will review all those comments and make some final decisions and select final measures. And that's currently planned for the April meeting next year. And so if all that goes as planned, we're looking at implementation at the end of next year. So there's a couple items in your packet. There's summaries of the May 17th and June 11th meetings. Those are documents 2 and 3. And so those have most of the motions that will be included today. There's actually some motions that are from earlier Habitat meetings that are still relevant, and Dave will explain those as he goes along. The alternatives document is the one that's copied separately, and you should have it in a landscape format. That's what matches this presentation, and it has all the alternatives with the maps. As I mentioned, document 14 is the memo from the CAT and the plan development team to the committees that has our original versions of the alternatives along with some rationale and discussion. There's a double-sided one-page document that presents briefly an analysis that the staff worked on, looking at which gears are catching groundfish, the question there being if you have spawning closures and your goal is to prohibit gears that catch groundfish and those spawning closures, what gears might that be? That's something we can either talk more about today or at a later time. Also just wanted to point out that there's enforcement committee comments on sort of this range of alternatives and the options generally, and that's under tab 11. It's document 1. They had a meeting on June 5th. Some of those comments were discussed at the Habitat Committee meeting last week, so those of you who were there should be a little bit familiar. And then there's a number of different pieces of correspondence that came in as well. Sorry, that's a little hard to read. But you've seen these a number of times. There's a number of goals and objectives for the amendment. If you want to refresh yourselves with them in detail, that memo, document 14, all of them are listed on starting on page 47. I think there's two pages, maybe. But there's a series of objectives that are really come from the EFH regulations in response to the EFH measures and the Magnuson Act. And so what this amendment is trying to do related to EFH is to identify and implement mechanisms to protect, conserve, and enhance EFH of those species managed by the Council to the extent practicable. And the omnibus approach really is captured in this one: integrate and optimize measures to minimize the adverse effects of fishing on EFH across all Council-managed FMPs. And so that's why we're doing this as an integrated action, or that's the objective goal that followed from that. And then there was some objectives that followed from that goal. Some of the objectives of the amendment are more groundfish driven. Obviously, you're aware that the Council added consideration of the groundfish closures to this amendment in April of 2011. And these goals and objectives that you see on the screen were approved unanimously by the Council at the November meeting of last year. And so the big picture goals are to enhance groundfish fishery productivity and to maximize societal net benefits from the groundfish stocks while addressing current management needs. And then there was four more specific objectives that followed from those. So the first related to the first type of alternatives that we're going to be looking at today: improved groundfish spawning protection, including protection of localized spawning contingents or subpopulations of stocks. The two that sort of relate more directly to the juvenile and habitat elements: improved protection of critical groundfish habitats and improved refuge for critical life history stages. And then finally, the fourth objective is to improve access to both the use and non-use benefits arising from closed area management across deer types, fisheries, and groups. So the alternatives we're going to be talking about today really sort of focus on those sets of goals and objectives. So I started with the spawning alternatives because it was actually one of the first motions made at the May committee meeting, so it seemed like a logical order, and also because it's sort of a more straightforward set of alternatives, so it seemed like a good place to start. Basically, there's two, potentially three alternatives. The first one, no action. These are the measures that we're assuming are having some spawning benefits that we would analyze as part of a no-action alternative. So those include the year-round groundfish closures, the Western Gulf of Maine, Cache's Ledge, Closed Area 1 and 2, and the Nantucket Lightship closure, the sector rolling closures, the common pool rolling closures, the May Georges Bank closure, Gulf of Maine seasonal cod spawning area or the whaleback. All of these right now are more or less close to gears capable of catching groundfish. There's different exemptions for different areas, as you're familiar with. there's also some Massachusetts Division designated cod spawning areas as well that are not council alternatives, but or not council areas, but do provide spawning protection and would apply to vessels that the council manages. So the alternative to that, the action alternative, would be just really a subset of those no-action areas and measures. So rather than having the 5 year-round groundfish closures, there would be instead just a seasonal implementation of closed area 1 and 2 during February, March, and April. Spawning closures to groundfish gears in the Western Gulf of Maine would be just the sector rolling closures, and the common pool rolling closures would be eliminated. So those would apply in April, May, and June as they do now for the sector rolling closures. The Georges Bank closure in May, you can see on the figure, it's the dark shaded area. And then obviously continuing the Gulf of Maine seasonal cod spawning area, the whaleback. The committee didn't discuss extensively the the gear types and fleets that this would apply to. Our presumption for now is that they would apply to the same fleets that they currently apply to. Alternative 3, which there aren't figures for, there was a motion made at the Habitat Committee meeting last week that focused just on the northern part of Closed Area 1 as being part of this alternative rather than the entirety of Closed Area 1. So I guess that would be spawning Alternative 3. You would keep the other measures, but just use that northern part of Closed Area 1. So this just sort of, probably don't need to show these ones, goes by month. And what Andy put up was basically the month by month how these spawning areas would look. So for the action alternative, some months would have no spawning protections at all. And then for the no action, some of the months would just have the year-round closures and not any of the seasonal areas. So next we've got the range of alternatives related to habitat protection. So those areas designed to minimize adverse effects of fishing on EFH, improve protection for juvenile groundfish and their habitats, and designate dedicated habitat research areas. This is going to be fun. So the no action alternative in this case, when we're talking about habitat protection, is really the combination of the existing year-round groundfish closures, the 5 closures discussed earlier, and the 7 habitat closures. As I mentioned, the year-round groundfish closures are closed generally to gears capable of taking groundfish. There's some exemptions, some access programs within those. And then the habitat closures right now are universally implemented as mobile bottom-tending gear closures. There's a range of action alternatives. They're grouped by region. There's somewhere between 2 and I think 5 action alternatives per region that I'll present on the next series of slides. These action alternatives combine areas that were developed by the Habitat PDT and the Habitat Committee, some areas developed through the CAT process, through their hotspot analysis, and then it's modified by the oversight committees. And they're generally designed to protect vulnerable habitats, protect aggregations of juveniles, juvenile groundfish and their associated habitats, and there was a particular focus on juvenile groundfish that have an association with complex substrates. So there's a lot of similarity between the areas identified by the PDT and the CAP, but some important differences. And then finally, some of these areas that are called out in these alternatives are really designed around habitat research. And the habitat research, within the Habitat Committee process, the PDT developed a whole research agenda, a number of questions that are sort of outstanding and important in order to better manage fishing and habitat interactions in the future and better understand the benefits that we're getting out of habitat protections. And so there's 3 different research areas that are included in some of these regions that would do that. So the regions we're going to be looking at are the Western Gulf of Maine, the Central Gulf of Maine, Eastern Gulf of Maine, Georges Bank, and then Great South Channel in southern New England. There was some discussion about whether we should combine Central and Eastern Gulf of Maine or keep them separate. When the PDT and the CAT originally started talking about them, we actually separated them. We developed the alternatives for them in a combined way, and then the committee separated them again. So in the Western Gulf of Maine, Andy's got Alternative 1 up there on the right-hand screen, and you can see that this alternative consists of the existing Western Gulf of Maine groundfish closed area and the habitat closed area. And basically what the pie charts are showing you are the size of various areas in the Western Gulf of Maine kind of relative to each other and then relative to areas that would remain open. So the largest part of the pie chart is combining habitat measures in the Western Gulf of Maine, then also assuming the no-action spawning measure for the Western Gulf of Maine. This is the area within Gulf of Maine statistical areas that remains open to fishing. This is the area, the purple is the area that represents the extent of the common pool whirling closures if you account for overlaps but add them up throughout the year. So this area is, in some months at least, closed to common pool vessels as a rolling closure. This is combining all months of the year, the sector rolling closures, and then these smaller slices of pie are the habitat areas and the year-round ground fish areas. Hopefully they're a little bit more readable in your handout. Alternative 2 for the Western Gulf of Maine is this series of areas. The coastal area you see is the Bigelow Bight, and that was identified based on the distribution of juvenile groundfish hotspots. The other area that is down in the lower part and hatched is called the Sierra 2 area. Sierra stands for Sanctuary Ecological Research Area. We were asked to analyze that both as a research area and as a potential longer-term management area to minimize the adverse effects of fishing on EFH. So under this alternative, you would be designating that area longer term as a mobile bottom tending gear closed area, but then this research area designation would be overlaid on that. And there are some additional implications associated with the research area designation. And so what's been discussed for that area is that it would include sort of the no action restrictions, so additional restrictions on gear that catches groundfish. And then we discussed, I believe it's in your handout, but it's not on this chart, as a reference area in the southern part that would have additional restrictions on recreational gear that removes groundfish. And the idea with that is to be able to look at how groundfish removals are influencing the ecosystem, particularly the benthic components of the ecosystem as a whole. And so the way to sort of get at those questions the most effectively is to have these additional restrictions on various types of groundfish removals. The committees discussed that all of the habitat management areas, not necessarily the spawning areas, because the rolling closures do go into state waters, but that the habitat-related areas that would be year-round would be only within federal waters. And so any of these areas that are coastal, you see that the irregular boundary at the state waters line. So alternative 3 is in some ways similar, but some of the areas are different. So again, you see the Bigelow Bight area, that's that coastal area. The Sierra 2 area would only in this case be designated as a research area. And then these other two areas, this one is the one we're calling the Jeffrey's Ledge area. You should be able to read some of the place names on the charts that are in the handout that you have in front of you. This is the Jeffrey's Ledge area, and then this southern area focuses on more of the coarse substrates that are within the part of the Stellwagen Bank that lies within the existing Western Gulf of Maine closure. So this alternative would implement these three areas as mobile bottom tending gear closures, and then the Sierra area with the additional layers of restrictions. A motion will come up later. Something that's been discussed at the Habitat Committee is to have these research areas have a sunset date. So while the other habitat areas are envisioned as more of a long-term ongoing thing, that could obviously be always modified by the council, that the research areas are something that the committee discussed not wanting to have them closed indefinitely if they weren't being used, because obviously, you know, the council's maybe creating a place for research to occur and setting up some objectives for that research via this action, but wouldn't in fact be doing the research itself. And so the idea was to not have these research areas continue if the work wasn't being either actively planned or actually being done at the time. And so we'd need to set up with this amendment, if we wanted to do that sunset clause, some clear criteria by which you would decide to remove a research area. And then that could hopefully be done without action by the council, just by the action of the service. So Western Gulf of Maine Alternative 4 didn't move forward out of the committee. So when you see a break in the numbering here, that's why. It was an alternative that came from the CAT and the PDT, but didn't get through the committee process. So Alternative 5 is very similar to the last alternative you saw, but the area covered by this Bigelow Bight area is a smaller area. It just focuses on some of the southern aggregations of various species of juvenile groundfish. And it again includes the Sierra 2 as a research area, and then the Stellwagen and Jeffrey's Ledge adverse effects area. Sorry, Jean, if I'm like shining this in your eye. Okay, so those are the Western Gulf of Maine alternatives. I guess I have to go back. So what Andy's showing on his screen, there's two other sort of sub-options that could go along with any of these alternatives in the Western Gulf of Maine. I think people are probably familiar with the fact that we have a 12-inch roller gear restriction in this green shaded area in the Western Gulf of Maine. It basically limits the ground gear on the sweep of a trawl to no more than the largest pieces can't be any greater than 12 inches in diameter. And then, so this would basically maintain that restriction but specify that it's a habitat measure. So it wouldn't just be a measure in the ground fish plan, it would be a measure, you know, within sort of our suite of habitat protection measures that we define in the Omnibus Amendment. So operationally, going with this first option here wouldn't actually change the, you know, how the gear restriction is currently applied or where it is used, but it would make it a habitat measure explicitly. And then the option on the right is sort of the largest extent of potential habitat management areas in the Western Gulf of Maine. If you combine all of them, this is their footprint. All of them aren't obviously combined in any of the alternatives you just saw. But whatever alternative was selected, you would make potentially just these candidate habitat management areas, roller gear restriction areas. If you were to overlap these two, all of these areas are within the existing roller gear area, except that some portions of the Bigelow Bight area extend a little bit further to the north. And so, again, the idea is that you could overlay these on top of some of the other area management alternatives in the Western Gulf of Maine. So moving to the Central Gulf of Maine, something just to point out quickly with the Central Gulf of Maine, because the PDT CAT alternatives combined Central and Eastern Gulf of Maine and then the committee split them out, we ended up sort of the way the motions were written, including Jeffrey's Bank in both the Central Gulf of Maine and the Eastern Gulf of Maine alternatives. If the council today wants to keep them separated, my suggestion based on the way that the CAT and the PDT discussed them would be actually to include any of the Jeffrey's Bank options for Jeffrey's Bank, either the no action option, which is shown here, or some of the modifications of it, or the Toothacre Ridge area, in the Eastern Gulf of Maine groupings rather than in the Central Gulf of Maine. I think oceanographically that seems more appropriate. That was at least a discussion that the PDT and the CAT had. Or you could recombine the Eastern and Central Gulf of Maine, and then it wouldn't matter. But in any case, as part of no action, you've got Cash's Ledge, the groundfish closure, which is the larger, irregularly shaped gray area, and then this is the Cash's Ledge habitat closure. Cash's Ledge itself is really a feature that sort of runs from this corner down just a little bit past this corner of the area. And then Jeffrey's Bank, which maybe is more eastern Maine, but is also an existing habitat management area. Alternative two for the Central Gulf of Maine would sort of modify things somewhat. You've got various habitat PDT developed areas that are part of this alternative. This Cash's Ledge area moves the boundary east slightly, and it really focuses the boundaries more on the ledge feature itself and removes some deeper water areas to the west. And the thinking was to increase potential access should the Cash's Ledge groundfish closure be removed. Within here, you've got this Ammon Rock area. It's only really envisioned as an add-on to the Cash's Ledge area, so it wasn't ever designed to be a standalone measure. But Ammon Rock was envisioned as a closure to all types of fishing gear that can be managed by the New England Council. It's a really unique in the region offshore kelp forest habitat. It's probably not actually fishable by a lot of different gear types, but it's kind of got a very unique ecology and almost in some ways replicates an inshore environment, but offshore. So that's the Ammon Rock area. Over here is Fippany's Ledge. This is currently within the Cash's Ledge groundfish closure, so it hasn't been fished by most of these gear types for quite a while. But here it would be just the top of this ledge feature would be called out as a habitat area. Over here is Platt's Bank, and there's sort of two sort of shallowest parts of Platt's Bank where we've mapped some complex habitat, and then so these two sub-areas would combine to be a Platt's Bank habitat area. And then this is basically a modification of the existing Jeffrey's Bank habitat area. Again, this could go into the Eastern Gulf of Maine alternative. And then finally, Central Gulf of Maine Alternative 3 is just a variation on this. It removes some of the smaller areas on Platts Bank and Fippenese Ledge and really just focuses on some of those larger areas on Caches and Jeffries Bank, and also includes that Ammon Rock area. So no action for the Eastern Gulf of Maine. Depending if you include Jeffries Bank here, it's either no management areas for habitat purposes or just the Jeffries Bank habitat management area. There's two action alternatives for the Eastern Gulf of Maine, sort of starting west to east. You've got the Jeffries Bank adverse effects minimization area. So again, this is the modification of an existing area. This is what we're calling the Eastern Maine area. The Eastern Maine DHRA, or the smaller version of the Eastern Maine juvenile groundfish habitat area, is this hatched area. And then this larger version is based on expanding the footprint of that area to include some additional hotspots identified through the closed area technical teams analyses. And so the way this alternative would work, this sort of core smaller area would be designated as a dedicated habitat research area, and then this larger area would be designated more longer term as a habitat management area close to mobile bottom tending gears. And then this area way down east is called the Machias area. It's bound by the EEZ on this boundary, and then state waters on the other boundary. So that's alternative 3 for the Eastern Gulf of Maine. Alternative 4 for the Western Gulf of Maine, again, includes the Machias area. It's the same area here. But it would use just the smaller version of the Eastern Maine area, overlay the DHRA designation within it, and then develop some set of boundaries that combine elements of this Toothacre Ridge area and also the existing Jeffries Bank habitat management area. So these boundaries kind of are yet to be determined, but these two areas overlap and do include juvenile groundfish hotspots for some similar species, and so there's an opportunity to put those together as we move forward. On George's Bank, this is the no-action alternative that we're assuming for habitat protection. This is obviously the existing closed area 2 groundfish area, the larger area, and then the habitat area within it. I'm sure you're aware that this northern part here is also managed as a habitat area of particular concern. The fact that it has a mobile gear closure in it is as a result of it being designated as a habitat area, but it's been identified as a habitat of concern for juvenile codfish for quite a long time. And then this is closed area 1. There's the full groundfish area and then a northern and southern element of the habitat closure. And obviously within some of these areas, there's various access programs that have been occurring in many parts of closed area 1 and then also in the southern part of closed area 2. George's Bank alternative, there's 4 action alternatives on George's Bank. So this is alternative 2. Something that all of these action alternatives have in common is that this southern part of closed area 1, this is currently the southern part of the habitat closure, would be designated as a dedicated habitat research area, close to mobile bottom tending gear. And then this alternative has 2 elements. It has this northern edge habitat management area, and then this southeast part's habitat management area. So both of these have been discussed as mobile bottom tending gear closures that focuses on sort of complex habitats in this region of the bank, and then also on some juvenile groundfish aggregations in this region of the bank. This area here really combines some areas that have been individually discussed throughout the process, the existing habitat closure in closed area 2, what we've called the Georgia Shoal East area, which is really over here, and then the deeper waters of this area were discussed by the closed area technical team as a potential juvenile groundfish area. There's hot spots for juvenile haddock identified there. So alternative 3 is very similar, except it narrows the focus of this area up on the northern edge. It eliminates most of the overlap with what we call the Georgia's Bank or Georgia Shoal East area, and it only covers a subset of the existing habitat closure in closed area 2, so this is sort of a more focused option here, and this also would retain the southeast parts area. Alternative 4 is a slightly different combination. It It's this larger area up on the northern edge, and it also includes a gear-modified area. This area was developed by the Habitat and Groundfish Committee jointly at their meeting in May, and it basically would be within this hatched area, a gear modification area, and a couple of different gear modifications have been discussed. And there's some motions on those that will come up later, but basically earlier in the process, the Habitat Advisory Panel and Plan Development Team discussed and then brought to the committee a series of options that would be for trawls, and it would raise the ground cable off the seabed by putting discs around the ground cable at I think a 5-fathom spacing is what we originally discussed, potentially capping total ground cable length going along with that. Something else that came up at the council meeting in April was the idea of prohibiting ground cables altogether and then potentially needing to cap bridle lengths if you did that. So you wouldn't need the discs because there wouldn't be ground cables at all used on the trawls. So essentially what we have to date as a part of the options for these areas would be these two different gear measures. So whether the council chooses today to continue analysis of both of those or just one of those is obviously, you know, to your discretion. But so there's those two separate gear options, the ground cable modification and then the removal of ground cables. And we asked the groundfish advisors what they would recommend as an appropriate cap on bridle length if you were to eliminate ground cables entirely, and they suggested 30 fathoms. So that's what we'd be assuming now if we were to analyze those kind of a measure. So that would apply in this hatched area, and then this upper area would be maintained as a mobile gear closed area, and again, the research area. And then finally, Alternative 5 on Georgia's Bank implements the gear modified area on Georgia Shoal, and then uses just the smaller version of this northern edge area that combines the groundfish area, the existing habitat area, and some smaller part of the Georgia Shoal East area. Just to point out, because I got a question about it, this Georgia Shoal area here is really similar to an area that was developed through the habitat process called Georgia Shoal West. They don't overlap completely, but they overlap probably about 80 to 85%, if I had to guess. I haven't actually calculated it. So I think, you know, this area or Georgia Shoal West are certainly viable alternatives to one another. Thank you, Lou. You always want to be safe with your computer, I guess. So those are the alternatives for Georgia's Bank. You good?
Yeah.
Okay, so finally, these are the alternatives that cover sort of the Great South Channel, Nantucket Shoals, and Southern New England region. No action for this region really just includes the lightship. Honestly, you could probably include some of the closed area one areas either with this region or with the Georgia's Bank region. We chose to put them with the Georgia's Bank region. But in any case, this is obviously the existing lightship groundfish closure and the existing lightship habitat closure with this extension where they don't overlap up onto Nantucket Shoal. Great. And we've broken Andy's whole system. So I guess I could just discuss in general all of the action alternatives in this region include these areas on Cox Ledge, and there's two individual areas, one that sort of covers Cox's Ledge itself and another that covers another feature, shallow feature called 19 Fathom Bank. So those are in the western part of all of these alternatives. And then what varies between these alternatives are the areas that cover more of the channel Nantucket Shoals region. And what's been discussed in terms of measures for these areas is mobile bottom tending closure, gear closure, and Cox's Ledge, and then either a mobile bottom tending gear closure in the Great South Channel, Nantucket Shoals areas, or some kind of a gear modification, as I discussed for Georgia Shoals. So that would be either the ground cable elimination with the bridle cap or the ground cable raising it off the seabed with the disc that way. So this is alternative two. It's the, I think, largest of the areas covered in any of these alternatives. the central core of this option actually came out of a discussion between the Habitat PDT and some industry members. And then first the Habitat PDT sort of built on these additional areas that we called add-ons. I'll have another figure later that hopefully explains how everything fits together, that protected additional areas of complex habitat by sort of adding on to that original core area at the margin. And then at the committee meeting last week, we had discussed and looked at some data, the technical teams, in terms of where are juvenile groundfish distributed in these areas, because we were asked to think about what are the juvenile groundfish protective benefits of these various habitat areas that came through the habitat side of the process. And so a comment that we made was that looking at juvenile cod caches in this region in general, really they're a lot more to the east, centered more to the east than the various habitat management areas were. And so this alternative arose sort of out of that discussion, and it basically covers some additional eastern areas and better covers some juvenile groundfish distributions. Alternative three is something that came out of the Habitat PDT analysis. This includes the core area, which is sort of in the center of here, and then some of these additional areas just around the margins on the east and the west and the south, southern boundaries. Alternative four wasn't moved forward by the committee, so alternative five is what we're calling the Nantucket Shoals area, because it really shifts a bit west and more onto Nantucket Shoals. The western boundary is, I believe, 69 degrees 50 minutes, and that pretty much hits Massachusetts state waters in a straight line, and then really has the same north south extent, so it just kind of shifts the whole habitat area to the east. The PDT hasn't really had the opportunity yet to do a lot of analysis on this area to figure out how the substrate or epifaunal composition differs as compared to some of the original options. And then finally, alternative seven. Again, alternative six didn't go forward out of committee. Alternative seven would be this area. And there was some discussion about whether or not my interpretation of this was actually right when I created the figure. But this, the eastern boundary here is where the extent of the core area that came out of discussions with industry and the Habitat PDT. And then the western boundary is the same as the Nantucket Shoals area. It goes to 6950. Having some discussions earlier today with some members of the audience that are here, we actually developed a slightly different version of this area. So it goes to at least 6950 west and extends further west to 70 degrees where it can, where it doesn't interfere with state waters. And otherwise is relatively similar on the east. And then this, what's shown on this figure is actually sort of an entire motion that came up at the Habitat Committee. And it combines some spawning and some juvenile and habitat elements. So this is the DHRA enclosed area one. This would potentially be a spawning closure, February, March, and April. So this is that spawning alternative three that I mentioned earlier. And then this is an area that was identified as being important for habitat, would be sort of monitored for future gear modification efforts going forward. And so this is kind of one motion at the committee level that really incorporates some spawning elements, some elements on Georgia's shoal or on Georgia's bank, and then some elements in the Great South Channel. So that's all I have on what the alternatives are. You know, we didn't want to take the time to go into a lot of technical details or rationale, but you know, Andy and I are happy to take any questions and answer them as best we can in terms of how these various areas were developed. So I'll turn it back over to the chair.
Thank you for that presentation. I think what we will do is the questions on the alternatives will probably come up as the motions are put forward. We will try and group some of the motions where possible by areas. So we will take public comment on them as they come up by areas. But I'm going to turn it back over to the chair.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. as long as the alternative 7 is up there, I just wanted to point out that, that's an alternative that's come completely from industry, has a lot to recommend itself, and we were actually working on it this morning. So we've got a long way to go to get this all put together. Once it goes out to for analysis, it'll be analyzed for its effect on what the NEPA says is the human environment, and they will be looking at taking this right from the NEPA document, ecological, aesthetic, historical, cultural, economic, social, or health impacts. So there'll be an analysis of the economic and social impacts as well. All of that's part of the NEPA analysis. Now, I think it's time to get into the motions. Okay. I have become convinced that Skynet has become self-aware and that its personality is an entirely malignant. Computers hate me. It's visceral. Okay, can we get that up a little larger? Okay, the first motion, committee motion, is to clarify that the council would use a possible combination of status quo measures, CAT PDT alternatives, and SASE-derived areas to achieve the stated goals and objectives of this amendment, but that the proposed management areas are not intended to be additive. This was put in to clarify how we're going to put these together. There was some question at the committee meeting as to how we could put them together, and if we took a piece of one and put it with another one, if the parts we didn't use would go away, or if they would wind up getting sucked into it and create more area closed than was originally intended. So that's what this motion is intended to do, and that's why it's there.
Okay, that's a committee motion. No second required. I'll go to the audience for any comments on this. Back to the council. Tom Dempsey.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I support this motion. I think we need to address the heartburn people are feeling in as they get these charts and look at overlays that cover huge swaths of bottom. We can only mitigate that to a certain extent or express our intent so far, but I think this is really where we're going to end up, whether it's in the central Gulf of Maine or eastern Georgia's. What we're going to have to look at once we get to final action is pour through all the analysis, pour through all the comments, and leave ourselves the flexibility to mix and match to achieve our goals in each of these identified subregions. So I think this is a strong signal as to where we're heading with this, and hopefully we'll minimize the extent that we can some of the sticker shock as people look at overlapping alternatives. So that's really where this came from, and as I said, I support this direction.
Anyone else? Terry Alexander.
Yeah, this one here was actually a motion to substitute that I had put up, and it still makes me nervous. There's no real clear intention here other than they could be what we have now plus new stuff. That I think that's what the angst is amongst the industry. I mean, I really do. I mean, because we have no guarantee that once we do this, that we don't have any alternative but to implement it. You know, so I think that's what everybody's nervous about, and I don't think this motion is clear enough to do that. So I'm just going to hear what everybody has to say and then come back.
Dave Cahill.
Yeah, I have two general questions that I want to ask that really apply to all these motions today. The first is of the general counsel, and that is, how does the lawsuit filed to keep the existing closed areas closed affect what we're doing today? Or does it?
Gene.
You're talking about the most recent lawsuit challenging 48 it doesn't affect it at all right now, just a pending lawsuit.
Okay. So, in other words, how we develop options today has that has no bearing on it.
I mean, it can be further challenged, but the fact that a lawsuit has been filed doesn't, without a decision, doesn't prevent taking any actions today.
Okay, thank you. And the second question is for the regional administrator in light of what he said over the last several days of how do we do less with less, and we've got enough options here that I mean, my head is just swimming, and I've been on this committee for 9 years. You know, do you expect us to winnow this list down and truly do less with less, or are we going to go forward with enough stuff here to keep people analyzing stuff into the next century?
That's a good question, Dave, and I don't have an answer for that right now, because with what you see in the report, there's probably an infinite number of combinations here. I think the best thing right now is to just proceed with options and get them up on the board and see what it looks like as we go forward. Because I'm not sure, my head's swimming too as I try and contemplate what makes sense. To this motion, I think it is important for us to understand these aren't additive. But I'm trying to figure out with all the possible combinations and spatially thinking, what does this look like? I don't know either. But I'm not thinking right now about work limitations right now. At some point we have to think about that, but I'm not thinking about that right now.
Okay, thank you.
Ben Spelzano.
The concern I have over this motion is the last part of the motion, which says it is not intended to be additive. It doesn't say it's not going to be additive. It says it's not intended to. Those are two totally different issues for me. Thank you.
Matt McKenzie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to see it wordsmithed a little tighter to address Vincent's concerns and Terry's concerns. But I think I agree with Tom that we need to make this clear to the folks who will be affected by this, that we're not looking to impose new things on top of things that are pre-existing, but rather to take the tools that we've identified and that we've been living with, take the best combination moving forward. So there's something with some wordsmithing we can do to that to address some of these issues.
Well, I'm hearing from several people that there's a desire to wordsmith. Terry Alexander.
I'll wordsmith, then. Actually, it's probably going to be a motion to substitute. And the motion is, it is a motion to substitute. And the motion to substitute is, it is the intent of the council that we are looking at new closures. Actually, Karen has it. I'm sorry. Not that one. Wrong
one.
Not that one, Karen. I don't think I sent this one to you then. Okay, so let's type it then. I'm sorry. All right. You ready, Karen? It is the intent of the council that we are looking at new closures and habitat areas to replace the old mortality closures and habitat areas, and not to have additional closures on top of what we have now. I think that's plain, concise, doesn't leave a lot of wiggle room. If I can get a second. It doesn't say that we can't use
the existing
ones. I think it's clearer.
Tom Neese.
Gene, we're whispering over here because we're just wondering about the form of this motion and whether it constrains decisions too early. I mean, what if you did all the alternatives and then you decided that the no-action alternative was the one you wanted, which keeps the existing closures? So, you know, does this cause some kind of NEPA problem because you're making a, you know, like pre-decisional action here or something? And I don't know if it actually constrains what the council does or not because it's just stating intent. But I just...
Terry Alexander.
Yeah.
I think Dr. Pierce and Frank came up with a fix for that, to add, replace or revise the old, which doesn't eliminate us using the...
You can do it now because you don't have a seconder to... Yeah.
Okay, replace or revise.
Okay. Is there somebody going to second it? Vince. Discussion. Gene?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not exactly sure what this does or doesn't do in terms of considering options. I mean, if this is intended to curtail alternatives and options that are going to be discussed today or included in the document, then I think that is problematic. And I don't know if it's a matter of wordsmithing to clarify that that's not the intent or if you want to just rewrite this.
Let me ask you a question. Did you have that same issue with the first version?
It seemed to be more open-ended than this one. I wasn't looking at it in that perspective. I'd have to see it again. I think the council just has to decide what it wants to do and get clarification on this motion so that all options and alternatives that, you know, are on the table still and can be voted on and or further developed if that's what the council wants to do.
Terry Alexander, help us out.
Well, I mean, to clarify, my intention is that we're not going to eliminate anything out of this, any of these options, by putting this motion on the board. This motion is just saying that we're looking at opening up the current mortality closures to the industry, to the people in the audience. And we have that option to do that. But as we sit here today, people, I'm sure, because, I mean, I'm digging through the documents all the time, and all I see is closures, you know. So, I mean, I think that we need to have some assurance that we're looking at opening some stuff, too.
Maybe a better way to do this is just to say, move that the council consider new closures in habitat areas to replace or revise. And that way, you know, that's one thing you're considering, but it doesn't mean you can't consider anything else. Instead of, I mean, I think that's probably what you meant, right? And maybe it's less problematic to say consider. I don't know. It's
yes, it is. So that would be fine with me, Gene.
So I would just say that the council consider. Does that alleviate some of your concerns, Rip or Tom?
John.
Another way to do it, instead of replace or revise, would be to say replace if warranted, because the if warranted then talks about really what you're trying to do is keep all options on the table. And the if warranted allows you to keep the no action alternative on the table. I think that's what we're concerned with. The if warranted means you're considering all options. So I'd move to amend that motion to replace or revise with if warranted.
We're a little too deep into this at the moment. If we can get it done on a friendly basis, right, rather than well, that would be amending a substituted, and we haven't voted on it, and I'll be lost.
It's fine as far as I'm concerned. It would be a friendly amendment.
Vince, you?
I'm kind of lost in it a little bit myself right now, but do the friendly, and we'll take a look at it.
Replace if warranted.
If warranted was added into there. Okay, on the list at the moment, I have Dave Preble, Doug Grout, John Quinn.
Okay, yeah, I think that we're making more out of this than it needs to be. The problem with this motion, the original motion, is they're not intended to be additive. That's not clear. That's the part that's not clear. Where this motion arose from was the fear within industry that what would happen is that we would wind up creating new areas without eliminating the old areas. That's the whole issue right there. And if we address that issue, we've got it, because there has been this fear that that would happen. It's never been the intent from the very beginning. The reason we started doing the groundfish portion of this action was so that we wouldn't run into that problem. The other thing is that Terry's motion, my problem with that is that it says new closures, and closures is by no means the only tool that we're using. So that is a real problem for me, because that's not all we're doing. The original motion says of measures, and not all measures are closures. So I think there's an assumption there that everything's going to be closed, and that's simply not true. But we just need to wordsmith. I think we just need to wordsmith the last phrase here, that the not intended to be additive thing. That's just simply not clear. So.
Doug Grout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I understand perfectly where the industry's concern here is that, you know, we could have the status quo measures, and then we could also add on some of the new proposed alternatives. And that's not something that I think we've been contemplating here. And my question, if we went out with, for example, the various alternatives that we have in each area and all the areas, and we have status quo, and then we have two or three or four alternatives, and we chose, and we go out to public hearing, I'm not sure that we could choose status quo and then add on a new area, because that would be more conservative than we went out to public hearing with. And I'd like to hear an interpretation from Gina that. That's the way I've always understood things, that we've come out, we've got a status quo alternative, which has a bunch of big blocks that have been closed for a while, or have management alternatives in there. And now we've come up with a number of alternatives within each area. And if we were to choose status quo and say, oh, but we also want to add, we wanted to have the status quo alternatives in the western Gulf of Maine, and then we wanted to add in the Bigelow Bay on top of that. If I don't see that that's something that we could legally choose after we've gone out to public hearing with it, because that would be more conservative than we had gone to public hearing with. So in a way, I think if we look at this, we may not be allowed to do additive alternatives.
Well, right. I mean, it depends on how you write the document. If you're writing it with three or four alternatives that are not mix and matchable, or you make them clear that they're mutually exclusive, and that's what the public intend is commenting on, then I think what you're saying is correct, Doug. If there's a mixing and matching alternative that comes back that was reasonably contemplated or could be expected to be formulated based on comments, then you could probably do it. And I might clarify, you can do anything you want, actually, after the public hearing. It just may require that you revise the document and go out for another public hearing. So it's really a matter of timing, not what you can legally do or not. It would not be appropriate to have mutually exclusive alternatives and then you go back and get comments and then go back and revise those in the way that you're describing it, that you end up with additive alternatives that were never contemplated without going back out to public hearings. So that's the question. And I think to avoid confusion about that in the public, the document should make it clear as to how the alternatives interrelate, if at all.
John Quinn.
Yeah, I just wanted to throw out maybe a possible different approach to the same thing, because I certainly support the concept of maybe we could put in the document an automatic reopener clause for any currently closed areas would be automatically reopened upon the implementation of the new plan, and then it's clear what's going to happen. It's not what's additive or it's the intent of, putting my lawyer hat on, the intent of the council, you know, that certainly could be looked at closely. So if it was an automatic reopener, it might be a cleaner way to do it, as long as Gene thinks it's something that would be doable at this stage of the decision making. And I've got language if there's interest.
Okay, I've got Tom Dempsey, Terry Stockwell, Mary Beth Tooley.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I agree with a lot of what Dave Preble had to say. I think, while I understand, I think we're all largely going in the same direction, I feel like this motion's basically backing into the underlying motion. I mean, several of the friendlies basically just wrote in different ways the language that we had in the underlying motion, which is, here's the approach that we're going to take. We're going to look at each of these subregions individually. We're going to approach them in a sort of mix and match fashion, driven by NEPA considerations, that we have a full range of alternatives in there, and we're going to evaluate them under our stated goals of the amendment. And these options are not intended to be additive. Now, we could wordsmith, if people have better text there, that's fine, but I feel like we're just getting closer and closer to exactly the motion underlying this that we're trying to substitute. I'm not sure the value of it. So my preference is to vote this down, go back to the original motion, which is explicit of the goals, explicitly tied to the goals of the action, explicitly tied to subregion-specific goals, and then if we need to wordsmith that, then we actually do that. I think we're just getting a little bit too far down here.
Terry Stockwell.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was comfortable with the original motion, and I'm also comfortable with this motion. I think we're getting a little bit too wrapped around the axle right now. I suggest we vote it up or down, and we've got a lot of other business this afternoon.
Mary Beth Tooley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just had a little concerns about this ability to mix and match and trying to write the document up in such a way that would prohibit any of that to occur, because in the past we've gotten, you know, definitely wrapped around the axle at final decision making when we limit ourselves to alternatives that we can't adjust. And so I would hope that that's, even though I have some concerns about what that mixing and matching might be, I think it makes final decision making very difficult if we lock ourselves in at this stage. And as to the motion, I think I could support this motion. I like John Quinn's thought. I don't know if we want to do anything about that at this particular moment, but I think I support the underlying motion as well.
Chairman Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just going to suggest if the intent is to preserve a full range of options down the road, then it might be helpful to say that the action alternatives would supersede or modify the existing mortality closures and habitat areas.
Dave Preble.
Yeah, I think Rick's going to come up with the solution. It sounds like it to me. It might be best just to vote them both down and then write in that kind of wording that they can't supersede. That's nice and simple and clean. I've never been happy with that first motion it bothered me that not intended to be additive just doesn't seem clear. I've never been real comfortable with that. With the substitute motion, I have a real problem with identifying our method of management as closure. That's not. It should say measures, because closure is certainly not the only thing we have to do, and closure is, in most cases, not a particularly good thing to do.
Further discussion, Terry.
That being said, should we table this motion and come back to it later, or would you rather just vote it up and down?
Let's vote on it. I'm going to call the question. All those in favor? That's an easy count. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4. You're not? 6. 15. Abstention. 1. Okay. Tom Dempsey.
So back on this main motion, to me it sounds like rather than replace the entire thing with the words that Rick suggested, maybe that should just go at the end instead of not intended to be additive. So at the end, are intended to supersede or modify existing management areas or measures. Supersede or modify existing management areas or measures. Maybe Rick remembers his words better than I do.
Measures. Help us out, Rick.
Mr. Chairman, I just had, would supersede or modify existing mortality closures and habitat areas. If you want to use other language to describe those things that you're modifying, obviously that's up to you.
Mortality closures and habitat areas.
Or instead of in.
Yeah, existing mortality closures and habitat measures, let's say, instead of areas to address Dave Preble's concern. And I'd offer this as an amendment to the underlying motion.
Good. Is there a second to that? Dave Preble. Discussion. I'm going to call a question. All those in favor of the motion? 1700. Motion carries. Dave Preble.
Okay, we need to get the...
excuse me. I'm sorry. That was a motion to amend. We're back. That's on the right. Main motion is amended. Further discussion. Vito.
Sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've been watching this, haven't been able to comment on it yet, but what we've been concerned about is the additive potential to it. And I could see it's really not an either or, but or intent to modify, you could modify existing mortality closures. I think you could modify an existing mortality closure by adding one of the new alternatives. And I was at, a lot of the Habitat meetings. There was a committee meeting where this discussion came up, and there was a vote by the committee. I'm not sure if it was unanimous, and I'm not sure if Michelle would have it in the notes, but it was at Hotel Providence, and the industry was very concerned about this exact thing. It was on an area-by-area basis, and if you're in the Gulf of Maine, you either take status quo, which would be the Western Gulf of Maine closed area, Cache's Ledge, the ones that we have now, or you take some combination of the new ones that are coming out of the Habitat Amendment, not both together. That was a very explicit, and that was important to industry to know, that you don't start with a baseline of any existing closure and then start adding to it potentially, because that, to me, this motion doesn't preclude that from happening, because it says you could modify an existing mortality closure. One way to modify an existing one is to add to it. So we don't see this as doing what the industry is concerned with. It's in every area. If you're in the channel, you either take the existing closed area one, or you take one of the new alternatives. Not that you've got all of those that can happen in combination. That's already been voted, and that's the assumption we've been going along. So this, to me, I think this motion gets us to the point where we could be additive, and it's not what we've been commenting on through the entire amendment to this point. It was status quo is one option in each area, or a combination of the new alternatives. And unless someone can explain how this motion would preclude the council in September from taking an existing closure and then modifying it with one of the new alternatives on top of it. If that could happen, then we'd be firmly against this motion, because that's not the way we proceeded in this amendment.
Just two comments, if I may, be. Sure. I did ask for comments up front on the underlying motion, so
I apologize.
And I don't see that what we have done, we're trying to make this better, and my reading of it and looking at it is saying that it can't be additive, and it the intent is not to have the closures supersede or modify. I mean, I think there's two layers of saying it can't be additive in the way that I read it. And thirdly, again, we're getting back to this isn't the final motion. This is just to continue the development of the DEIS for public comment.
So if the word additive is remaining up there, I thought the council member was going to strike that and put the new language in.
No, okay. They're both there.
The additive does a lot for us. Thank
you. Back to the council. Under the main motion as amended, further discussion? Call the question. All those in favor? 17 in favor. Dave Preble. Mary Beth, you?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a process question. I'm just trying to figure out how to best follow along, so I was curious how many motions that Dave would have, and which documents? I mean, I know we have two committee meeting summaries. Are we starting with one and going to another, or just try to figure out how to way to track the process here?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. In an attempt to make what's complicated as simple as possible, it's all in handout number four. Okay, and we're going to track that along that same line. And there's a total of 16 motions, so we're on track right now to finish at 1 a.m.?
2.
Okay. We ready to go? Okay, second motion.
Mary Beth, did you still?
Yeah, there are no motions in document number four, so the motions must be present in the other documents, the meeting summaries, I'm assuming. So are we following it chronologically through the meeting summaries or not?
Yeah, the motions are derived from the alternatives, and there are a total of 16 of them. As far as the motion, go ahead, Michelle.
So maybe I can clarify. There's sort of a couple different categories of motions. There's motions that are something like, in the Western Gulf of Maine, approve for analysis alternatives 1, 3, and 5. And those motions are mostly in the committee summary from June 11th. And then there's other types of motions that are really measures-based. So for the Georgia Shoal and Great South Channel alternatives, analyze ground cable, no ground cables, and modified ground cables. And so the idea was to take up the areas first, so Western Gulf of Maine alternative 2, 3, and 4, another motion Central Gulf of Maine alternative 3 and 4, another motion Eastern Maine alternative 2 and 3, and then to take up the motions that are more measures for within the areas. And those measures for within the areas, some of those motions came out of the June 11th meeting, and some of those motions came out of the May 17th meeting. So I think mostly we'd be starting with motions that are in that June 11th summary in the order that they are in that summary, and also in the order that they are in the presentation. Does that help?
Okay, motion number two. That's not it. Okay, related to spawning protections, analyze the following alternatives in the omnibus amendment. 1. Status quo of all seasonal and year-round groundfish areas. 2. Current cod protection areas, current sector rolling closure areas, closed area 1 and closed area 2, as seasonal areas from February until May, and the May closure east of Cape Cod. Additional revisions to spawning management areas will be considered in the next appropriate groundfish action. Also, to add spawning protection measures list of frameworkable items defined in the omnibus amendment. And that motion passed 8-1-1.
It's a committee motion, no second required. I will go to the public for comments. Judd?
Judd Crawford, Pew Charitable Trust. This is an essential fish habitat amendment. The Magnuson Act, or the Sustainable Fisheries Act in 1996, defined essential fish habitat as areas and waters, substrates needed for spawning, breeding, feeding, growth to maturity. And your options that you, or your goals and objectives that you adopted back in November for the groundfish part of this, pretty much hit on all of those, or most of them anyway, talking about growth to maturity, spawning, and but not really dealing with the feeding aspect of this or the forage aspect of this. We see this move here on spawning, which doesn't take advantage of any of the work done by your closed area technical team, as far as I can see, on developing alternatives and mapping out areas where spawning is probably going on, as being really sort of a regressive proposal. It suggests that you have a status quo situation, and then you have as an alternative to that something that's going to offer less protection for spawning fish. I think you need to develop a better set of alternatives for this amendment for it to pass as a strong essential fish habitat amendment. You haven't used the best available science that you have, that you spent a lot of time developing, as far as I can tell, in this. And we strongly urge you to try to strengthen this part of the amendment before it gets, I'm sorry, it's this part of the process before you commence further with the analysis and develop the final document for public review and for choosing the preferred alternatives that you're going to look at in the fall. So there's a lot of things here that really ought to be done in an essential fish habitat amendment that are not doing, but dropping the ball or putting forward weak proposals on spawning seems like a glaring deficiency to us. Thanks.
Maggie.
Maggie Raymond, Associated Fisheries of Maine, speaking in support of the motion. And I would actually say that I don't think this motion actually goes far enough with, and I would ask the council to consider adding to this motion the juvenile habitat management measures to be considered in a separate action for two reasons. One is to try to get these habitat options that had been developed based on SASE out the door and done, and then not to slow that down by adding these spawning and juvenile protection measures, but also to bring in the industry into the discussion of where those, how those measures should be developed, where the areas are that should be protected. And that was, as you recall, that was a recommendation of the SSC that you involve the industry in that discussion. And you know, to this point, the industry has had really no involvement in developing any of these options. They've not been able to give you the benefit of their expertise in these areas. I don't think it's going to, I mean, putting off those things to another action, I'm not saying don't do them, I'm just saying put them off to another action, is not going to, you know, hurt the groundfish resource any worse than it is. I mean, we've had closures in place for 20 years, and spawning closures, and HAPC for George's Bank Cod, and enclosed area too, and the groundfish resource couldn't be any worse off if we had no management at all. So I'm not sure, you know, we're not convinced that these closures are any new closures are going to improve that at all, but we would certainly want to be more involved in the development of any options that are specifically related to groundfish. So I would urge you to support this motion as well as putting the juvenile options in this to another subsequent action. Thank you.
Anyone else? I see Peter, and then there was somebody behind there. Okay. Oh, great.
Peter Shelley, Conservation Law Foundation. I support the arguments that Dr. Crawford made earlier on why this aspect of essential fish habitat needs to be in the document, not just for procedural reasons, but so that the council and the public can understand what the productivity implications are of different closure options. I don't think it's going to delay anything. As I understand it, the CATT has done a lot of the work. It was just blocked from being brought forward. So it's a relatively modest task to add it back in. Thank you.
Anyone else? Back to the council. Okay, we'll start. Was there something I missed? Oh, Andy.
I just wanted to remind the council how this came about. And the CAT had several alternatives dealing with spawning. They were presented to the committee. The committee felt that some of the options needed more work, and in the meantime, this option was passed by the committee in the May 17th meeting, and the CAT and the PDT were asked, does this alternative meet the objectives of the plan? And it was, in fact, very similar to one of the options that the CAT originally brought forth. After discussion and review of the information, the CAT's consensus was that, yes, it did meet the objectives of the plan. It turned the existing rolling closure's purpose into something that protects spawning and overlapped the areas of spawning that the CAT had identified. The CAT did, however, feel that one of the other options that we had brought forward would be more efficient in that they were smaller and better focused on where we, based upon the information that we had at hand, detected spawning activity of various groundfish species, not just cod. That said, this alternative was one of the options brought forward. It met the objectives of the plan and would enable the council to justify releasing the year-round closures that were in part originally intended to protect spawning and turn them into something that, coupled with the rolling closures, did the job and met the objectives of the plan. Thank you.
Got Tom Dempsey, and then we'll come right up around this way.
Thanks, and thanks for that, Andy. I guess one question I have now, and then I have a couple comments, is whether it's not possible under our existing frameworkable items list to make the revision suggested to the rolling closures, the rolling spawning closures that were suggested by the CAT. It seems to me that revising the timing or extent of the areas closed would fall under a frameworkable list, and if so, if the answer to that is yes already, then I'd suggest amending this to explicitly include them, the development of these alternatives in Framework 51, which seems to be the next groundfish action. So I'm not sure if that's a question perhaps at this point still to Tom, our former groundfish chair, but it seems to me that just revising the timing and extent of rolling spawning closures is something that we could do in a framework today.
I would defer to the agency a little bit, but I would point out that all the existing rolling closures and all the existing spawning closures were adopted through framework actions.
With that said, I would like to amend, if you'd like a formal amendment, I'd like to amend this motion to replace next appropriate groundfish action with considered in groundfish framework 51. And then I have some comments about the content if I have a second.
Tom Neese.
Oh,
I didn't wait for a second. Oh.
Is there a second to that motion? David Pierce.
Well, thanks, Dr. Pierce. It's effectively what the motion says already, which is the next available groundfish action. I think it's the framework that we just initiated today, and I think it makes sense given what the CAT analysis has demonstrated and what we decided at the previous committee meeting, that if we're going to revise those spawning closures, those seasonal spawning closures, either by area or by timing, that we should do that as soon as possible. I fully support spawning protections, and those rolling closures, in my mind, should be done as soon as possible with the information at hand and through the groundfish plan. I think the spawning habitat protections are what we ultimately need to deal with and will deal with in the omnibus habitat amendment. When I look at, say, the seven-year process of developing SASE, the understanding from the outset was if you identify the hard, vulnerable bottom, that will have positive, significant positive impacts for all life stages of key groundfish stocks as well as many of our other stocks. That was fundamental to pursuing SASE-driven habitat alternatives. So my sense is many of our existing or proposed management options will have significant positive impacts on our spawning habitat protections. Just, you know, by putting habitat protections where habitat protections should be, where there's hard, vulnerable habitat. So I actually think this, it is appropriate to include revisions to the seasonal spawning closures, effectively the non-habitat measures that we have in place to protect spawners in the groundfish action, and continue to analyze the spawning impacts, the positive impacts of revised closures or revised management areas in the omnibus. And I think the CAT analysis will allow us to do that. So I don't think those two things are mutually exclusive. I think we can do this, work on our seasonal closures, our seasonal measures, and still improve habitat protections for spawning fish with some of the alternatives that we have in front of us in the habitat omnibus, and I think we can use the CAT analysis to help us compare those. Thank you.
Tom Neese.
I have a question for Gene about this approach. I guess I have two concerns. One is that we've learned through experience that taking something into one action and splitting into two actions doesn't reduce workloads. It increases them. It expands the scope of Framework 51 quite a bit. And I'm not sure it really reduces the scope of the amendment. But my question for Gene here is whether, you know, Framework 51 will probably be an EA as presently designed. And I'm just curious whether taking the spawning protections out of an amendment that's being supported with an EIS and then putting it into what at least is anticipated right now is being supported by an EA runs us into segmentation issues.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, that's you know, an issue to consider. That's actually similar to an issue that's been raised in litigation right now concerning the groundfish actions that we took. I mean, the classic case of segmentation is where you split up actions so you don't have to do an EIS under any of them. But that's there are other aspects of segmentation, however, that could come into play that don't fit the classic example. So without knowing all the details of the extent of impact, et cetera, that's involved with splitting these out, I can't give you a definitive answer off the top of my head. It's not precluded per se. That's all I can say.
Matt McKenzie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Given the significant number of concerns that many people have expressed about this motion, I'd like to, once we've decided on Tom's amendment, propose an amendment to substitute. Motion to substitute.
David Pierce, do you have a comment at this point?
With regard to...
I'm not trying to force you.
No. I've just have to be deliberate with my... Tom's motion to amend does make sense to me, especially because my focus is on codfish, spawning codfish, protecting spawning codfish. And that should be obvious from all the work we've done inside state waters, implementing two particular closures that have been rather strategic inside state waters to protect spawning aggregations that do show rather remarkable site fidelity. I'm not especially concerned about spawning protection for codfish tied to habitat, since the work we've done has shown that they're spawning in areas and on habitat where one would not expect that spawning to occur. Not hard bottom. Bottom is relatively mixed. They just go to those spots for some particular reason. So I think it does make sense to go with the framework, groundfish framework 51, and then to say frameworkable items, additional spawning protection measures would be frameworkable items in the omnibus amendment. It seems to make sense. Right now, the options that we have before us in the omnibus that we're considering to bring out to public hearing, they don't do much to protect spawning codfish. And I say that because the Division of Marine Fisheries research with the fishing industry has indicated that there are spring spawners and there are fall spawners. And I note that the options that we have before us for spring closures to protect spawning fish, again, all species, not just cod, I recognize that, those particular options miss the times when codfish are spawning inside state waters and nearby. For example, we have in Massachusetts a spring closure just south of Gloucester, shown in the figures, April 16 through July 21. They're spawning over that time period, yet there's nothing in the document that would provide any sort of protection for spawning cod in June or July in the areas of where we know the fish is spawning. Plus, there's nothing in the document that would provide for protection of spawning cod in the fall. And we have a fall-winter closure that goes from November into January down off of Boston, and that goes down also off of Boston. So those particular measures to protect spawning codfish at those times can be done through a framework action. Now, I'm not going to make any motion to add any additional areas, any more statistical areas at those times of the year, such as November, December, or January, to protect spawning codfish, because that would not be fair to the fishing industry and it would be too restrictive. It would take away too many opportunities. I'm not going to do that. And I prefer to work with the fishing industry and such groups as the Nature Conservancy that is now working with the Division of Marine Fisheries to identify some additional spawning areas with fishermen's cooperation, great cooperation, south of Boston, inside state waters, with the intent that we would close those areas inside state waters and then come to the council with data in hand, obtained working with the fishing industry, for specific strategic closures in federal waters nearby, in nearby state, next to state waters where we've implemented our closures. So that's my preferred approach relative to protecting spawning fish, with cod at the top of the list. So with that explanation, and I hope it's somewhat lucid, the motion on the board makes to amend makes a great deal of sense.
Terry Stockman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was prepared to support the original motion, and I appreciate the spirit of the motion to amend. However, I'm opposed to the specific remand that it be included in Framework 51. We just launched Framework 51 a couple hours ago. Adding this to it, we'll have already toppled over the tree. The issues are complex, and it might be ready, it might not. And for it to impede the spec process and the number of other issues that Jamie laid out this morning, I'm not willing to jeopardize. So I'm going to oppose the motion to amend.
Dave Gaethel.
Yeah, I also oppose the motion to amend, mainly because I think it's a timing issue. I don't think you're going to have any significantly new information by the time Framework 51 rolls around. The original motion was crafted very carefully, and I don't really want to debate the audience, but I do rather vigorously disagree with some of the statements that were made. This is what we know right now. And this is something I know a fair amount about. I've done a lot of research on it. And it's been designed to capture what we know now and to put in place a mechanism for, as we learn more, to be able to easily bring it forward once we have the research in hand. Remember, we're supposed to be doing science-based management, not advocacy-based management. I think a lot of things, and I think there's a lot of people in the audience that think a lot of things, but they don't know them. And you don't know them until you prove them. And the way to prove them is with research. And, I think there is a lot of research being done. David just mentioned some of it. I think there needs to be more done up and down the coast, backside of the Cape, Maine, a lot of places. And when it comes forward with definitive spawning times and areas, then you put it in place with a framework. The second thing I'm concerned with by specifying Framework 51 is that Framework 51 will probably get done before the never-ending habitat amendment because it has to be done. And the never-ending habitat amendment is going to be never-ending as long as people keep larding onto the Christmas tree. And so for all those things that I just said, I'm going to vote against the motion to amend, even though I'm sympathetic to it, because I don't think it's the right time and the right place. And I think the motion as written captures what we need to do at this time, and that's it.
Tom Dempsey.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I just want to get back to something that Tom Neese said. He said, well, we're taking the spawning protections out of the habitat omnibus, and that's certainly not the intent of this approach, and it doesn't sound like that's the perspective of the CAT team. The intent is to separate the two types of spawning protections we have and to deal with those in two different vehicles. We deal with the seasonal closures, the rolling closures in the groundfish plan, and we would still deal with the spawning protections in our habitat plan by better identifying and better protecting the sensitive, vulnerable bottom that's critical to all these life stages, including spawning fish. So I really see it as an appropriate separation. In terms of this amended motion to include in Framework 51, I think this approach gets us to improve spawning protections faster and with the information in hand. I mean, the CAT did a significant amount of work in terms of how you would improve and revise those spawning timing, the spawning closure timing and extent. So let's build on that, right? I mean, I don't see why we would wait to improve our spawning protections.
if we have information, and I think all of us were pretty impressed with the CATS analysis, if we have information to begin the development of alternatives in a framework to improve spawning aggregations, and someone said earlier, right now the groundfish fishery is in such a mess, it's like we have no management at all. Why would we wait to protect spawning fish? I mean, I honestly don't know what we would wait for. And in terms of Framework 51, I don't know that we're overloaded. It seems like Andy suggests and the CAT analysis could serve as a pretty significant launching off point. I mean, if Framework 51, which we started and initiated an hour or two ago, is already overloaded, when is there going to be a framework that can deal with this issue? I think we have significant information about how we could better protect spawning fish. I think we could do part of it through the framework and get it on the water fast. Somebody said, well, you know, Framework 51 is going to be implemented before the habitat action. You bet it will be. That's the point. I want these spawning protections in place. If we have information to improve it, let's do it now. Why not wait? I don't see why we would wait. So I support, obviously, the motion to include it in Framework 51. I don't think it's going to overload that document. And in the event that fails, then we'll do it in the next available action. But I really do think we should do this as soon as possible. That's why I brought the amended motion.
Andy.
Yeah, I know there was some concern expressed in terms of overloading Framework 51, but actually I'm more concerned about overloading the interaction between the habitat amendment and a framework action dealing with spawning as two different things. And yeah, having been exposed to this in Framework 48 and its effect on the habitat amendment, I'd hate to do that again. That being said, I thought that the concept behind the original motion on the board was to convert the rolling closures and the year-round areas to seasonal closures to gear capable of catching groundfish as a measure of protect spawning in lieu of the existing year-round closed areas and rolling closures that, you know, the purpose would be transformed into something else. As a measure for the short term to protect spawning until better spawning measures could be developed, not to take it out of the habitat amendment entirely.
Back to the council for the discussion. Tom.
You know, I'm still going to say that I'm still concerned about the influence of this in Framework 51. And I think Andy brings up a valid concern about the impact of this on the habitat amendment. Internally in the staff, all the expertise involved in developing improved spawning protections lies with the CAT and the Omnibus Habitat folks, the Habitat PDT. And if we now ask them to help us complete a similar analysis for improving spawning or aggregating protections for Framework 51, we run into the problem that Andy ran into with Framework 48. Probably not to the same extent, but at least to some extent, where he essentially put development on the work on the habitat amendment on hold while he completed the framework document. Now, I don't think it would be to the same extent here, but it's going to take some time away from it. We have a number of regulatory actions that we know need to be completed in Framework 51. We did not contemplate in priorities moving spawning protections or improved spawning protections into Framework 51. And we're already almost at the end of June, presumably, and then I don't know what the interaction would be if it turns out that through that process we conclude that we want to completely change the spawning closures while the Omnibus Habitat Amendment is going out to public hearing on something else. I mean, I think there's really a risk here that if you try and put this in Framework 51, it's going to cause a lot of conflicts between the two documents that we're going to have a difficult time sorting out.
Okay. I'm going to try and push this along. I'm going to call the question. All those in favor of the motion to amend? Two. Opposed? Opposed. The motion to amend fails. We're back on the main motion. Matt McKenzie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In light of this last discussion, I'd like to make a motion to substitute on the, of this main motion. Karen, I think you've got the language. I hope. To read into the record. To move that the council, and there's a lot of similarities with the main motion, but I substitute the language regardless, include the following, move that the council include the following spawning alternatives for analysis in the omnibus amendment. One, status quo of all seasonal and year-round groundfish areas. Two, current cod protection areas, current sector rolling closure areas, closed area one and closed area two as seasonal areas from February until May, and the May closure is east of Cape Cod. Additional revisions to spawning management areas will be considered in the next appropriate groundfish action. Two, include for analysis in the omnibus amendment the existing year-round groundfish and habitat closed areas, the no-action alternatives, for juvenile fish protections, and analyze the cat juvenile protection areas, in particular the two Bigelow Bite areas, Eastern Maine, Toothacre, Achai, Southeast Parts, in the next appropriate groundfish action. Three, add spawning and juvenile protection measures to the list of frameworkable items defined in the omnibus amendment. I apologize to Dr. Pierce.
I was going to say, is this your first motion? Well, it's, is there a second to this? Peter Kendall.
I'll be brief in my justification for this. There's a number of problems that have come from the audience, and we've expressed a number of concerns about how to move ahead with the original motion. What I tried to do in this motion was give us the tools to analyze and compare the proposals that we're moving ahead, and it seems to me that this is a good way to go ahead and do this. It also addresses some of the desires for people to have flexible spawning protection actions. That was highlighted in the SSC, and it was highlighted from public from both industry and environmental organizations just a few moments ago.
Terry Alexander.
Yeah, I think I support it. I think I do. It pretty much does what I think that. I was thinking that we should be doing, and it gives us the flexibility that the SSC was asking for yesterday. I mean, making things frameworkable makes our job a whole lot easier, I think. So, and I think I support it.
Dave Gaisel.
I'm like Terry. I think I do, but I'm not sure. I do have some procedural questions, though. If we went ahead as the way things were laid out that we seem to be going a few minutes ago, with a number of motions to be analyzed, those would be in an EIS. What is this going to be in? Is it an EIS or an EA? Because now they will have never been analyzed in the EIS, if I'm correct.
companies.
I've got a question because I'm just trying to understand the second paragraph here in light of some of the alternatives that came out of the committee this morning. And I'm not sure that the staff really understands what this does. I mean, the alternatives that the committee did this morning, or I'm sorry, that Michelle presented this afternoon, included in some of the alternatives, I think, either portions of Bigelow Bight juvenile protections areas or all of Bigelow Bight protection areas. And so when I read paragraph 2, it sounds like this is saying that that's taken out of all of those alternatives, or is this just saying analyze them again later, or...
If I can clarify, I included the parenthetical mentioning of the Bigelow Bight areas, Toothacre, Machias, to remove any ambiguity in my previous language. I'm more than happy to remove those if that clarifies and qualms people's concerns. Does that address some of your questions, Tom?
Well, I'm not opining either way. I'm just trying to understand what the second paragraph does. Andy, do you understand what the second paragraph is doing?
I'm even more confused by taking it out. My read of number two, and my interpretation may be different than what you intended, so please correct me. I think number two takes out the cat groundfish habitat alternatives, which was in part related to a motion of the groundfish and habitat committees on May 17th. And then we asked the CAT and the PDT to evaluate whether those alone would meet the objectives, and the finding was that they would not. So I'm struggling with what this means, how it relates to the objectives that the council passed in November.
I tell you what I'm going to suggest. We'll take a break. I would ask Karen if you shrink down the type so that I see a lot of people in the audience trying to read what is up here so that it is not in violation of the Pierce rule and so that and then people will get a chance to look at it and digest, and then some people can talk offline. Hopefully we can get this resolved when we get back. Just so that people know, my intention then will be to work till 6 or 6:30 and see where we are at that point in time. And we'll make a decision then as to whether we will just break and then try and resume in the morning. So a 10-minute break, come back at 3:30.
Game 5.